Hello.
Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Catch with John Fisher on Blog Talk Radio, connecting life to faith.
World is trying to get it together, trying to help their fellow man, hoping we can make it better. Do you really think we can?
Yeah. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear John. Happy birthday to me.
Happy birthday, John.
Wait a minute.
Thank
you. You can sing happy birthday to yourself. That was awesome.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, although I kind of missed it up in the front. I forgot I got to say me. Well, but it works.
That's right.
So, yeah, I do feel like I'm kind of in the middle of my birthday right now, because I actually have had the day. The day was Sunday.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have this tradition that's growing now.
Yeah.
Of going to an angel game. And it's the only time I can get my entire family to go to an angel game, because it's my birthday and they have to. It's what I request. See? So that's the way it works. And now I have my seersucker spin stripe suit to wear.
Ah.
And my white hat. Yeah, the whole thing. The dress up, the old-fashioned deal.
I think you need to come with a new outfit, John, because that picture has been on your site, Facebook site, for the last year, hasn't it, Gunnar?
Well, yeah, it's been there for a year, but it's such an outstanding picture. How can you get, better than that? How can it get any better than that?
John, it's called change.
You haven't aged a bit, John. You look good. The suit, everything looks great, man. You're looking dapper.
Well, but, the whole deal is that, up on the big screen is Happy Birthday, John Fisher,
That's right.
That's amazing. And I don't know who got the picture, but I think it was a classic moment.
Were you
so,
up on
I agree. I think we have to change. We have to.
So were you up on everybody's shoulders in that picture? It looks like they're kind of like up on people's shoulders, like they're celebrating you after you won a World Series or something. What's going on there?
No, everybody else is sitting down. I'm standing up. They actually, everyone kind of clapped. My whole family started making a big deal when my name went up. And they did it very special, because they put me, and they left it up there for some time. The peons, get their birthday, their names scrolled down, by.
Yeah.
This was, it just, my luck and, good fortune to be a friend of the president of the Angels didn't hurt,
ooh,
I think,
no.
On this one.
Not in the least on this one, John.
everybody made all this thing, and they all started clapping, and I turned around.
Yeah.
And waved, and then people realized, all the people around us realized that I was the one they were talking about. So everybody cheered, and they all got excited. It was a lot of fun.
It's like, that's John Fisher. And those poor kids that are like in the Cub Scout troop or whatever, that their names get scrolled up and down. And then John Fisher. Those poor little kids, they're never again. They're like, I love it.
Of course, now we're going to have to beat that this year somehow.
I don't know how. I'm going to have to call John Carpenter and see what we can do.
Now,
Marty, I mean, you always love it. By the way, Marty, it's great to hear your voice here again on Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you, Gunnar. Thank you.
And of course, it's always wonderful to have you on Blog Talk Radio once again when we're talking about your favorite
exactly.
time.
I cannot run away from this.
And baseball, once again, you describe watching baseball as?
Watching paint dry.
Watching paint dry. John?
The same thing.
Yeah.
Now, I'll tell you something. If John could come up with a few more dollars so he could get seats out of the nosebleed seats way, 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 way up in the very, very, very top row so you can't even see the bloody little players, and got a little bit closer, we sprang for it a little bit, then maybe I could at least see that they have faces. But no, we're entirely too far up.
So we got to get a we got to start a crowdfunding campaign to get Marty out of
there
the nosebleed.
Yes.
There you go.
Or just me. Let all of them stay up there. The whole family can sit there in the nosebleed section, and just let me sit in the first class area.
Yeah. And so, like last Sunday was your. And by the way, John, man, there's some great. There's so many people, man. You're loved by so many people. People are posting all over social media saying happy birthday to you.
And I haven't even gotten to all the Facebook folks, but let me just shout out a general thank you to everybody, and I'll be getting on that later. But it's been fun to on that, and you know that's I guess the one cool thing about social media. I know there's lots of cool things about it, but this is one is that you hear from people that you haven't heard from, and I got a phone call. Sunday morning, I got a phone call from David Spence, and I went, David Spence? He was my roommate in 1970 when I traveled with Leighton Ford to three different crusades. And he called me from North Carolina to wish me a happy birthday. We had a ball talking. And that kind of stuff, I don't think that would have happened without, there's probably social media to let him know it was my birthday. You know.
Right. More than likely. Battery was just put on his calendar and couldn't wait for the May 17th to roll around.
Yeah.
Well, he probably has his phone, has like, he does, he sets the calendar, he gets a notification,
right.
You know, like
yeah.
three
yeah.
days ahead of time. So remember now, it's John's birthday coming up on... So that was Sunday, but then you've got another home game coming up. So we'll see what happens next.
No, that's the whole deal. It's on Monday, the 25th.
Okay,
so
Memorial
Monday.
Day.
Memorial Day.
Yeah.
Wow. And the game, of course, is at 6:00, and will be followed by a fireworks show, which is strictly for my birthday.
Only for your birthday. They wouldn't be doing
happy
that.
Happy birthday to me. How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Bing, bang, bada boom. Yeah.
Hey, Marty?
Yes.
What was that? Bing, bang, bada boom. Are you ready for this, Marty? Are you ready for the big birthday?
Here's the thing. He's already getting so excited about it. It's amazing. We do this tailgating thing in advance. I mean, we do this once a year. And my son brings his grill, and we cook hot dogs, And John just thinks this is the coolest thing, sitting out on a huge, giant driveway with thousands of vehicles and all of the exhaust. We're out there cooking these horribly horrible hot dogs out on the back of his truck. And John is just so happy, so happy. I mean, it doesn't take very much to please this guy.
Wow.
Yeah. But,
so we'll have to tune in to find out what happens this time, how you're going to one up last year, huh?
Yeah,
yep.
It's going to take a little bit.
We
right.
will.
Awesome.
We will.
John, bring Marty on. You guys are here together on the show tonight. This must be a special occasion. Tell us about what's happening tonight.
Well, for those who are regular followers of The Catch, they know that for a little over a week now, almost into our second week, we've been doing a study on Gideon from the Old Testament. And we're having really a lot of fun with this thing. And not only that, learning a ton. I'm finding stuff that I had no idea about. And so we're really enjoying this. And we're trying to grow our audience and grow our member partners. We'll get that to later. But we're shooting for the 300 of Gideon. So that would be really cool if we could get near that. But we're just into the whole idea of Gideon and who he is and what he teaches through his life. And so that's why we thought tonight would be really fun for both Marty and I to be on. And actually, I'm going to take a huge risk right now, and I am going to let Marty interview me. Marty's going to interview me about Gideon. And,
I'm going to be Barbara Walters.
Yeah, I've asked her to try not to skewer me too badly, but this
here's
is
the fun thing, Gunner.
I don't know that husbands should be often interviewed by their wives in public. Don't know. We'll find out.
Also, though, Gunner, I'm not in the same place that John is, so I can be able to say anything I want to, and he can't look at me sternly and say, "Don't go there." I don't have any clues from him whatsoever. So this is
going to
be fun.
This is going to be fun, and I my hands are off the mute button, and so it's a Donnybrook free for all battle royale on Gideon.
But to set this up a little bit, the story of Gideon probably is the best example of an ordinary man whom God made extraordinarily strong, and I think, and this is what I want to focus on, is how this is, I think this is like the perfect pattern for every man. Now, I'm going to discount the females in this story, but I want them to tune in because I think they'll see some insight. If men took on the perfect pattern of Gideon, I think that they might be able to illustrate exactly how God can make them strong.
Cool.
John, why don't you give a little bit of a little background on where we are with Gideon so that I can get into my questions.
Okay. Well, Gideon is in the book of Judges in the Old Testament, and this is at a time shortly after. There's a period of time that the children of Israel were freed from Egypt, went across the Red Sea, they wandered 40 years in the desert, and then finally Joshua took them across the Jordan River, and they started having success wiping out Canaanites everywhere and taking over what God had told them would be their home, their new home, their promised land. But, you know, like the whole story of the children of Israel, they're on again, off again. They're, you know, they do good for a while, and then they do evil in the sight of God. And you know, God told him a few very simple things. I want you to, these are people who, in a sense, God is going to judge through them taking over, and God told them they were to wipe them all out and to set up camp and to not intermingle or intermarry with them. And of course that did not last very long. They didn't wipe them all out. They made agreements with some of them. They kept some of the women because they were hot, and they just went downhill. And then when they got the women, they got the gods of the Canaanites. And it didn't take long for them to end up not only not in charge, but being under siege by these people who they were supposed to supplant. And that's a lot of because they adopted the gods of the Canaanites. The main one was a god named Baal or Baal, and he becomes he's just a god. He's not even a person. He's a thing, and of course that is a detestable in the sight of God. So he has about as much as he can take of that, and then he turns them over to the Midianites, these enemies around them, and gives them success over them as, in a sense, punishment. During this period of time, between now and when they start to get kings, which begins with Saul and David, is a period of time we call judges. There are no kings, but there are these judges that God sets up, and there's about 14 of them. And they seem to come about every 40 years. God will put his hand on one, and they'll come. And the cool thing is that there's some women in there, too. Jael, Deborah, these were also judges that God rose up And during that time, these guys were not only judges, but they were prophets, and they called the nation of Israel back to the Lord, and the people heard that. They pretty much all realized how stupid they were, and they came back to God, and then God would give them peace for 40 years. And then they drift away again, and till suddenly they're back, they've got Baals and Asherah poles in their houses, and there we go again, and then God's got to call up another judge. So that was a little bit too long of a story there, but that's where they are when this story begins, and we find Gideon hiding in a wine press because there's 120,000 Midianites encamped in a valley near where the Israelites are. And it's just a matter of time before these guys are going to come and take them. And they're there for the picking because they've already been harassing them. They maraud them when small groups stealing their crops and harassing them. These people, the children of Israel, are scared to death. And Gideon is one of those too, and he is in a wine press, not making wine, unfortunately. He's thrashing out wheat because it's a place where he feels like he can hide from the Midianites. And so that's where our story begins.
Okay. But I've got some questions for you.
Okay.
In relationship to this idea that, God took an ordinary man and made him an amazingly extraordinary strong man, I want to get back to the maleness of Gideon in the beginning, and I thought the best would be to start with you. And I noticed over these years that reputation is a very big thing to you, as well as it is to many of the men that I've met along the way. You seem mm-hmm. to all gather together, company together, and this is what I see. I see you pulling up your belt, checking to make sure that the zipper is pulled up and secure, sucking in your belly, and broadening out your chest, and you sort of strut around with each other, looking for who's going to get to be king of the mountain this time. Mm-hmm. Who is going to be able to exhibit the most power this time? Who's going to get to win this time? I'm this mm-hmm. huge, mighty, all masculine men. And my first question to you is, why do men do this with each other when they're out and about with each other? And why do I hardly ever see this John Wayne sort of a man when you're at home?
Well, I think the reason we do it when we're out is it's competition. It's not only competition, but then there's this peer thing. We all have to kind of be there together, and there is a certain kind of identity and energy that comes when the guys are all hanging out together and they're getting loud and they're having a good time or they're getting tough, and that's to a man, that there's hardly anything that feels quite as good as that, because you feel like you've arrived. The problem is we're playing a certain game, and this is a kind of charade, because inside we're all basically insecure. We all are pretty unsure of ourselves. In fact, the loudest ones are usually the most insecure, because they've got so much to try and cover up. And that's why when they get home, we're tired. We can't this thing up. Besides, at home, everybody can see us the way we really are. We can't make that thing work. And so we get back to our weaker, more insecure self, and then we don't want anybody to see that in our home. And so what we end up doing is, I think, kind of drawing pretty much into ourselves and being maybe more quiet and just hiding, kind of like Gideon.
You know, I've seen you with my two sons out in the public, and you said something to the effect of, act like a man. Don't cry. Get up, back on your bicycle, and act like a man. Or in your case, when you're out in public, act like you are anything but what you are at home. I need you to make me look like I am be a godly and strong father. So I need you to be anything but what you are at home. And so my question is, it's an act, and I'm just curious. Mm-hmm. The word act, I mean, act like a man, this is a big thing. I mean, the movies talk about men being men. And when you're in the company of strange men or friends that are men, you're acting like men. And I'm just curious, what is it to act like a man? And what is the difference when you are a man but not acting?
Hmm. Oh, my.
I'm so glad I'm not there with you.
Yeah, I would say, well, the act I've already pretty well described. It's got a lot of, in fact, can I tell the, I love my pigeon story. Can I tell my pigeon story?
Yes.
The pigeon, this is the greatest story of all for men. And that
let's
is.
Let's give a sign say that John thinks every story that he has is the greatest story of all.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Go ahead, John.
Okay, well, that's what we're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Any rate, this was in Union Square in San Francisco. I never forgot it. There was a pigeon, and he was after this young female pigeon. He was really hot on her trail. And I watched it. I just watched this whole thing develop. The closer he got to her, the more he had to puff up his chest. And he just, I don't know how they do that, but his chest just got bigger and bigger and bigger because he was trying to impress her. And the funny thing was, every time his chest would swell up so big that his face would be down inside there. His face was buried in his chest. It was so big. And he lose track of where he was going, and he would bump into things, and he'd lose his lady was off somewhere else. And so he kind of, you know, let his chest go back down, find her, and he'd go running over there and then pump up again. So somehow that to me is the act. That's the act. It's a lot of air. There's a lot of hot air.
Just described exactly what I'm talking about as far as men, except this pigeon didn't have jeans on, so he didn't have a zipper that he had to make sure that it was up in the air.
Yeah, right. Right, you didn't have to do that. But I thought the classic part of that story was that how he blinded himself in his own pride. And at that point, he couldn't even see where he was going. He wasn't worth anything to anybody. And I think your second part of your question was being a man without the act. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. What's the difference when you are a man but not acting?
Gee, I don't even know that I can answer that. I think you would, for one thing, you would be not self-conscious. You would be not trying to compete anymore. You would be knowing who you were and confident in your gifts, that you were simply able to be who you are and let that stand, whatever, wherever it fits. That wouldn't matter, because you'd be confident in yourself.
But the confidence in yourself, I'm curious. No. I think that when you let down when you stop the acting, what has to show forth is the harboring of a host of fears and inadequacies and insecurities.
Yeah.
And that somehow you seem to think that if you don't show it when you're acting, that somehow. What makes you think that no one else is, that you and the the other pigeons in San Francisco all puffed up and parading around each other, when in truth they're harboring, hiding behind a host of fears and inadequacies and insecurities. And what would happen if that was exposed?
Well, what happens?
John?
Wow.
I think that's the devil moving in on this, don't you, Gunner?
Yeah, it's we've been invaded.
Just that when the women almost vanilla grasp the understanding of their men in their life. Satan.
All right. Did we lose John?
I'm not
you
sure.
Open game. You know, you don't.
John was just taken up into a spaceship. John,
I'm going to tell you something. You've been gone. You've been gone for the last maybe 2 or 3 minutes.
Is that right?
Satan decided to interrupt just when women were about to understand the men in their life. this static sound came in that Gunner didn't know how to shut down, and you just kept on chatting, disclosing all the secrets. Would expose all men and allow all women to understand who their men really are. So you might want to have to step back a bit and help us understand what it is with harboring the host of fears and inadequacies and insecurity. What would make you think that other male that you're with isn't also doing the same? And what if you both disclose to one another your insecurities and inadequacies? Mm.
Well, am I okay now? Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Actually, that's a key to, I think, a real friendship, is if that can happen. And if people, you know, are able to be vulnerable to each other and be real and insecure and honest about their fears and their weaknesses and insecurities, to be able to be that way and also be accepted is probably the one of the best things in the world. It's what love is. And if we're able to be that way and still be accepted, and I think it's a rare thing for men to have that kind of relationship with each other. Because it takes a lot of courage. You know, it takes courage to do that. Be open like that.
This is the reason I want to bring home to you a question. And that is, would you say then that manliness might be a form of idolatry?
Yeah. It depends, of course, how you define that. But I would say
We've been defining it as far as, you know, who's going to be the king for the mountain of the day, who's going to get to
king
of
the mountain,
who's the most powerful.
Sure. Of course.
And not being vulnerable.
That's all idolatry, yeah. And that's all trying to come up to an image and an idea that we're all seeking to perpetuate. And there's kind of a silent agreement, too, that you don't break the code, you know. You've got to keep it going, you know. And if you do show your weakness, you know, then that it depends on the type of group, but that could cause a lot of other people to move away from you or to be afraid, because when someone reveals something about themselves, it always kind of opens the door to say, okay, who's going to follow me now? You know, who's going to be next? Who's going to do this too? And if nobody wants to, we're all worshiping the idol, then you're just there all by yourself.
Let me ask you something. What do you think Paul was talking about when he said, "When I am weak, then I am strong"? That's in 2 Corinthians 12, verse 10. What do you think Paul is asking or saying when he said, when I am strong, excuse me, when I am weak, then I am strong.
Well, what he's saying is that when you're weak, your weakness is actually spiritually the best thing that can happen to you, because God's at that point, then you yield yourself to Christ and to the Holy Spirit. You basically have no choice because of your need and your weakness. You come to Him, and then what you find out is that He was waiting for this. He's going, okay, fantastic. Now I can work in you, and I can work through you, and so that, you know, then I think slowly you begin to discover how that works, how to walk in the Spirit. You don't lose that weakness, but you don't always, you know, just, you know, mope around with nothing, because now you begin to discover, in my weakness, I am strong in the Lord, because it's not me. I'm in a sense removed from the picture, and now it becomes Christ in me, because I've been reduced to a level that I can't trust in myself anymore. I got to trust totally in Him.
With that knowledge, then, I'm going to ask you another question, and that is, so why are you still hiding behind the wine press of manualness?
Yeah. You know, these things are ingrained. They're so strong in us, and I think that even though you know all this stuff, you know, I can just get with a whole group of guys again, and if you're in a group of guys and you don't know them, then it's just, we immediately, you know, puff ourselves up. It's human nature, I think.
So the men that are pretending to be strong, because you said earlier that they obviously aren't strong, because no man is strong without the Lord, then you're saying the men that are pretending to be strong, can they hardly be trusted with greatness like Gideon?
Yeah.
Aren't you offering excuses when in fact, these limitations might be God's gift to you?
Right.
Versus excuses of why you're with a certain group of people and you have to be this way, and there's certain social rules you have to follow because you don't certainly want to have anybody, you know, for whatever reason, see Christ in you.
Yeah. And so you're hiding. You're basically hiding again because of the situation you're in. I think the limitations in our lives are our only hope, really. Because
go ahead.
Well, they are the things that bring us to the end of ourselves, and that's when we have no choice, really, but to rely on the Lord. And
I can't wait for my next question. I feel like the spider bringing the flock into the web. Because my next question, John, is so many people when they're back at home and don't have to put up the front of being this terribly together, you know, manly man, are saying either to their mates or to the women around them, but most importantly to God, I can't do this. This is too difficult of an assignment. I can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Well, you're right. That's where I was going. That maybe this is one of the reasons why we're so small at home, why we don't pull it off. Because we, you know, it's almost like we don't for me, this, I don't think I see my life at home as the same as my life out there. I don't in the morning and treat you and the children and my house with the same kind of importance that I would treat the stage. Oh, if I'm going on the stage, I'm going to teach the word. Now I'm going to be awake for this. I'm going to be empowered by the Spirit. I'm going to be, you know, here. And then when I get home, it's like, well, I go back into that weakness, but I don't take the step into my strength. It's like, well, I don't have to do that now. It's like I'm off now. And that's where we lose it, because we don't realize that actually it's more important whether we're working, we're godly at home than it is out there. I've got it backwards. The whole thing is reversed.
Joe, do you think that you're not the only man that is? By the way, I need to say that whenever you are on stage or whenever you do preach the word, I've never known you not to speak to the Holy Spirit. So I'm gonna separate the reality of how I know you as a man of God preaching the word compared mm-hmm. to a man out with the guys and pulling up his pants and making sure that his zipper mm-hmm. is secured and puffing out his chest. That's totally different than what you are when you're out there preaching the word. So I want to make sure that that's very different. But I certainly do not need you to come home and thus said the Lord and go marching around the house.
No, I don't need to do that. No.
On the other hand, when I say, you know, we need to come up with a mortgage, or we need to be able to care for additional funds, or we need to be able to care for Chandler, or we need to care about Annie or Christopher, that you go, I can't. Aren't you swearing
right.
to God? Aren't you saying to God, you know, screw you, I do not believe that you're sufficient for anything, that I can't do this. If in fact
you're
moving out from this place of weakness that you're mm-hmm. allowing the Lord create into strength.
Yeah, well, you're saying, no, maybe this is what it is, and especially if you're smart enough about spiritual things like me, that you know all the right things to say. You know that when you're weak, then you're strong, like you just said.
Uh-huh.
What it happens when you come home, it's still true, it's just you're not taking advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
You're not doing it. You do it there, but you don't do it at home. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying I'm going to walk around spouting scripture, but I need to be empowered to be a man of God in my home just as much as I need to be when I'm out speaking or doing mm-hmm. something out, you know,
mm-hmm.
out in the world, right? Would you agree?
Yeah, I do. But I think then, you know, when back to this word, I can't, when it comes
yeah.
to everyday stuff, that perhaps, you know, you left all of your armor out on the front door and you know, not forgotten that God has the grace to be able to sufficient for everything. And that's also a cute little word that people like to throw out unless you really mean it. And I think that sometimes we believe that God's going to meet us and every one of our needs. When we say we can't, he says you can, and I'm going to be working through you. There are times, though, when he doesn't. So what is that?
Times
you
when he doesn't work, when he doesn't
there,
work
there,
through
there's
you?
There's a sense of saying, it's kind of like if God promised us to meet us with every need we have, why do sometimes many people think he doesn't? Is it possible that we're again back to the male masculinity thing, trying to do it on our own instead of perhaps throwing ourselves onto the Lord?
Yeah, it certainly could be that. I think sometimes too, though, the Lord. Well, I don't want to get into that, but I just think sometimes sometimes. The Lord is with us in different ways, and I think sometimes he is farther. He seems farther away from us.
Do you think that people might measure things based on whether or not God's going to be gracious and sufficient for our needs based on how afraid we are, like Gideon behind the wine press going, "Who me? Who me? I'm the least of this and that. I'm nobody." And you're already talking about somebody else down the street who's somebody. When the reality is that he was hiding in the wine press, threshing wheat, you know, to feed the group, and hiding it from the Midianites so they wouldn't come and steal it. He was totally trying to be sufficient on his own, and totally, totally afraid. And of the 7 years that were going on with this, and all the raping and vengeance that was going on. And I'm just asking you, wouldn't you? I'm gonna put words in your mouth, and I don't mean to, but for me anyway, I am afraid. There is a reaction that I have for any difficult thing that I've been asked to do.
Mm-hmm.
Or any dangerous undertaking.
Well, I think I like what Dave Roper said about this, is that
I love Dave Roper.
Fear is natural and human, and God doesn't expect us not to have fear. I mean, it's actually fear is a good thing from the standpoint that it alerts us to a problem and to something we need to do something about. But the key is, do we continue in the fear, and or do we move from that? Do we claim the power of God? Do we step out and step through our fear and out into doing something about our life? And
so what you're saying is
step out and through the vulnerability and trust God to meet us there. That's what you got to do.
So what you're saying is that that God can turn our fear into strength?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
So he's not necessarily saying don't be afraid, because he understands that that's a natural human reaction that anyone
yeah.
has when they're facing any difficulty. Don't be afraid. The mortgage is due, but don't be
yeah.
afraid. This is something that you have that you're looking into. But I am. But he's not saying, you know, just put your head in the sand or sit back in the rocking chair and wait for God to do something. He's saying, keep on going.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
as you go, God is going to mm-hmm. turn that fear into strength.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And isn't Gideon just the perfect example of that?
Yes.
I mean, you know, I remember when the first assignment God gave him was to go knock down the Baal idol in his own home, in his
mm-hmm.
father's property. And it says he did it, but he did it at night because he was afraid of the people. And yet, you know what? There's no sense that God judges him in any way for that. God didn't care how he got it done. He did it, and he got 10 servants with him, and they went and they completed the job. Personally, I think it was very smart to go at night, because he got during the day, there would have been a crowd around, and they would not have been able to complete the job without confrontation continually
yeah, John,
with the people.
John, I'm sorry. The word said he was afraid, and so he did it.
He was afraid.
I mean,
I know. You got it. You got it.
You're doing your masculinity thing on me, and it confuses the women around us, and allows men to have justifications for why they do something instead of being honest about it. Because the point is the issue of courage. I mean, he was scared to death, but what overcame that sense of it didn't overcome the fear; it just mastered the fear, and that was courage.
Yes. And what was that? David had that quote that courage is fear saying its prayers.
Yes.
Wasn't that it?
Yes. Courage is fear saying its prayers. Yes. And that was Gideon. He was
mm-hmm.
denying his human form and doing it at night because he was scared to death. But the courage that was in him to do it, God didn't say, "I don't want to work with you because you're afraid." He didn't say that at all. He said, "Stop." Or he didn't say, "Stop being afraid." But he did enlist courage within him that motivated him to be able to master the fear.
Yeah.
So that he went out and did it.
Can I just say something that I think is really important here now to put some of this stuff all together?
This is your show.
Together.
Of course you can.
because what's so different about this is that, you know, I think in our natural tendency, and I think also the way the world thinks, we have to overcome these things. We have to overcome our fears, and we overcome our insecurities, and so we go to a self-help book, or we go to a motivational seminar, and we learn how to overcome those things so that we can then be strong. We can present that strong self because we've worked at it over and over again. We've reset our tapes. We've bolstered ourselves to where we can do that. That is human nature. That's the way we think. I don't think that is God's way, the spiritual way is not that you overcome your insecurity, but that you move in and through your insecurities in the power of God. You just go anyway, and you go trusting that God is going to strengthen you, and so then you know you are in His strength and not your own. And to me, that there's a big difference between those two ways of approaching strength.
But you're saying is the realization that we are weak and powerless is the beginning of God at work in us.
Exactly. Yep.
And so it was with Gideon, right?
And that's probably Gideon's biggest message. Yeah.
And the Lord ended by saying, at least in this section, I will be with you, and you will strike down all the Midianites together.
Yep. You will strike them all as if they were one man. Holy moly.
So coming home, my home,
fun.
When I see you this evening, and you're coming back from wherever you are, I'm not gonna see a man that's got the big answer for all of our needs. I'm not gonna see someone performing immortal deeds, and I'm not gonna see the terrific and the sensational John Fisher, but I am gonna see God.
Yeah.
I hope he's still there.
Yeah.
I think that the point is that people can hear your sense of insecurity and what you're saying, because of course we are, you know, and that you don't want to get my expectations up to something that you're not going to be, which would be back to the manliness thing, instead of being the man before God, who is willing to let the weaknesses within his insecurities to be the source of power. And it's God's power, not our power. And so, therefore, there's no mistake when you walk into home tonight that it's going to be God that's going to be represented through you and not necessarily you only.
There you go. That's
well, I can't,
that's it.
I can't wait for you to come home. When are you going to be home?
In about 2 minutes.
Really? That are you driving this? That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. No, John, I'm going to step aside and not have to, you know, I was going to say I'm going to go, you know, prep myself and look pretty and get my act together. Mm-hmm. But then again, what I would be doing then is the same thing.
Yeah, the same thing. And let me say, Marty, you did a tremendous job. You are really good at this.
Yeah,
I'm
just going to know you.
Yeah, I'm just gonna. I think I'm gonna have you interview some of our guests sometime. Gunnar, are you there? Are you still
I'm
with
actually,
us?
Yeah, I'm actually. I'm John. I'm actually out in your front yard right now. We're erecting a sign, a big scoreboard on your house that Marty wants. It says "Happy Birthday, John." So when you do come home, yeah. Anyway.
I love you, Gunnar. I love you. You're the best thing that's happened to us in so long of a time.
Oh, you guys are wonderful. Well, this has been fun. You guys did well. I didn't have to interrupt or mute, except for that weird abduction thing that happened in the middle of whatever, Marty. I don't know what happened to Jasper, but something came. Yeah.
It reminded me of a book millions of years ago. Remember the woman that was wrapped in saran wrap that she tried to greet her husband at? What was that book called, John? Do you know?
Jeez.
I don't remember.
Wow.
You got me.
Look it up.
Is it after hours? Is it 10 o'clock?
This is a form of manipulating reality instead of allowing the Lord to work through us.
Uh-huh.
Anyways, it was fun, Johnny. I can't wait to see you tonight.
Yeah. Okay.
Wow.
I can't wait to see you.
Oh.
So.
Wow.
So
what do you
I think.
I, what do you say to that? That was beautiful.
It was. And somewhat rare, I think. I think we should package this.
Yes. Well, there's a lot that you guys were able to unlock tonight, and I'll tell you what, just sitting back, you both did just a great job, great conversation, and really taking us deeper into what you've been writing about in The Catch, these videos
yep.
that you're making, and really this whole, once again, you know, maybe as we kind of land the plane on tonight's episode, you know, again, inviting people. Marty, are you still there?
I am.
We're inviting people again to become one of 300, right?
Yes. We're Gideon had an army of 300 after the Lord reduced thousands and thousands of people. Well, of course, they're part of our leadership, and we love them dearly. But what we're looking for is an army of 300 who can continue this ministry into the marketplace and beyond through the grace turned outward. And it's
fabulous.
That's great. And they can do that on the website, right? They can go to catchjohnfisher.com, and you can go there. You can be /become one of 300. And you can become one of 300 today, tonight, whenever you're listening to this this podcast.
Yes.
And to want more of this teaching and more of this daily catch inspiration and more of the things that we've got coming out, right? We're looking for that 300. And so, boy, will you guys do this? I mean, now I feel like I'm the host. Will you guys come back and do this again? Will you guys come back and
yep.
do this again? I think this has been wonderful.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, Gunnar, let me just add to you that, you know, one of the things that I don't think any of the readers understand is that there's an amazing prayer ministry going on with prayer partners
mm-hmm.
that are putting their life's needs and pains before a group of prayer warriors who 24/7 pray in an interactive form with these people that are requesting prayers. And from that has been this amazing group of people that I'm referring as prayer partners that are joining this internationally known group of people in prayer, and then move from there to the existing member partners, the ones that are already counted as one of 300, and how they have made that ministry happen, along with another ministry, which is amazing, and that is consulting individuals that have individual heartbreaking issues that need to be discussed and worked through. They're providing the funding to have one-on-one counseling, and then probably bigger than anything is the discipleship program that is putting boots on the ground.
Yeah.
Help this world. I mean, in 142 countries, for God's sake, this is what these member partners are doing. They're one of the 300. We just need a few more.
Absolutely.
There you
go. Well, go to
fantastic.
CatchJohnFisher.com to do that. You can do that right now and then help Grace Turned Outward and just this become one of 300. John and Marty, I think it's time we land the plane.
I was hoping you were going to say that.
We're saying that, and you know what? Let's do that, John. Tomorrow morning, we'll see. We'll see another video tomorrow. Can we expect another video?
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yes, we can. And be sure you watch
yes,
all
we
the
can.
I'll be waiting for it. And,
even if it is at 3:00 in the morning, and you have to be up at 3:30 to edit it.
Yes, we'll be ready to go. And so, until next time, though, and hey, one last thing. Remember, the mission for Monday isn't just, you know, happy birthday, John, at a baseball game. We want pictures. We need a new profile picture, for goodness sake.
Oh,
and we'll look forward to hearing about that next on the next episode. Until then,
Lance. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to
You're listening. listening to The Catch with John Fisher on Blog Talk Radio, connecting life to faith.
Love is trying to get it together, trying to help their fellow man, hoping we can make it better.
Good night, John. Good night, Marty.
Good night, you guys.
Good night, Gunner. Love you very much. Good night, babe.
Thank you.
See you home soon, John.
Yeah, you bet.